All right, everyone, greetings. Thank you for joining us. Great to see you all. I hope this is working okay. We're at my sister's house in Florida. This is Dr. Will Tuttle. It's December 19th, the third Thursday of December, and this is our World Peace Diet Circle call. We are just thrilled to be able to make this happen with our lecture schedule being now in kind of north central Florida. We made it through the cold into the heat, but we're glad to be here. So what we usually do, as you know, is we have just a short meditation, and then we'll just dive into all of the issues, and there's a lot of them right now, as usual. We have now Governor Gavin Newsom has declared bird flu an emergency, which is kind of bizarre. But anyway, we're just delighted to be able to continue doing our best to share the vegan message here. And so let's go ahead and just start with our meditation time. So I'd like to invite everyone, as you're listening, to let's just turn our attention within for a few minutes. And like I say, we make sure this is all working. Okay, so yeah. So let's take a moment now as we turn our attention within to connect with our inner sense of peace and harmony and the oneness that we have, that we share with the source of our life, the infinite love that is the source of all life, and give thanks for each other and for this network, this family of committed people who are working, doing our best to embody what vegan living is, which is ahimsa, nonviolence and kindness, compassion, mindfulness and awareness in our daily lives, and living our lives as best we can as an expression of compassion for all living beings. So as we breathe together, feeling our connection with each other and with the whole web of life and with all of the brothers and sisters that are working together with us to help raise awareness about the consequences of animal agriculture and the many benefits that we can develop in our own lives and in the lives of our society by questioning the official narratives in our society, in reconnecting with our inner wisdom, understanding that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness, unborn and undying, manifesting through this physical vehicle, each one of us with our own unique mission and purpose, and co-creating together a world of kindness and love and awareness to build on the work of those who have gone before us, all of the workers and the spiritual level and the political level and educational levels through the arts, all the other human beings and other beings who have devoted themselves to realizing and helping to make manifest the world that is available and potentially always here for us, a world of harmony and peace and abundance, freedom and creativity, joy and love, compassion and kindness and caring, full of the beauty that we see reflected always in the natural world, that we see reflected really in the faces of other human beings and in the faces of animals. And we give thanks now especially for the beings that we refer to as animals, for their ongoing sacrifice, that their suffering may not be in vain, that we may be agents of awakening to liberate animals and liberate all of us from the 10,000 year delusion of hurting animals, enslaving them and abusing them unnecessarily. And so we open our minds and hearts to the truth of being, the highest level, which is beyond words to express. And then we connect through words with the four aspects of our true home, four immeasurables, four infinite capacities that live within every cell of our being and at the core of our being. So with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of love and loving kindness, benevolence and goodwill for all living beings. And with every exhalation, we radiate love in all directions to all living beings, breathing and radiating love and kindness and benevolence to all living beings, excluding no one, including all living beings in the sphere of our kindness and concern, abiding in our true home, abiding in love. And with every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of compassion, the great yearning to do whatever we can to relieve the suffering of others, to be a force for liberation and healing. So with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of compassion to radiate from our heart. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all living beings, everywhere. Abiding in our true home of compassion, breathing and radiating compassion for all living beings, for all beings on the path of awakening, out of the delusions that bring suffering and conflict. With every inhalation, now we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world, the joy that is the essence of our true nature, the joy of being. And with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of joy to radiate from our hearts into the world in ever-expanding spheres. As our heart overflows with joy, may all beings open to the truth of joy that needs no reasons in the outer world at all. Abiding in our true home of joy. And finally, now we bring our consciousness home to the awareness of peace and harmony. With every exhalation, radiating peace into the entire manifested reality, to all living beings, as we abide in peace. The peace that does not come merely from human awareness, but the peace that comes from our true nature is eternal consciousness. Breathing and radiating peace in all directions to all living beings. And we see the whole earth now bathed in the light and the truth of peace and harmony. And we give thanks for the peace and harmony that live always within us, in all of our cells and in the awareness in our mind and heart, that every dimension of life is filled with the source of life, which is loving kindness and freedom and awareness. Now just completing our meditation time together, abiding in these four aspects of our true home, abiding in love, abiding in compassion for all beings, abiding in joy, abiding in peace, breathing and radiating love, compassion, joy, and peace. And as we enter the season of the celebration of holidays, of Christmas and upcoming New Year's and all the other time of gathering, we send forth our love again to all living beings, especially those who are perhaps suffering more acutely during these times, perhaps from loneliness or being close to the great change that we call death. We send forth all our wisdom, mercy, and love to all living beings, giving thanks, knowing that we are all on the great adventure of awakening to our true nature. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Okay, well, bless you all. Thanks again for your participation in our third Thursday gathering. As we come to you here from, like I say, my sister, she lives in Umatilla, Florida, which is, I guess, about an hour north of Orlando, something like that. And we'll be leaving in a couple of days on Sunday to drive down to Hippocrates. And as you all know, that's where we'll be for about 6 weeks. I think it's until about mid-February, a little before mid-February, February 10th, something like that, is what the schedule is. So we'll be there on staff giving some talks and concerts. And we've got one already, actually. I just found out today on Monday. Somebody canceled, so they would like me to speak on Monday at Hippocrates on food as medicine. That's a great one for Hippocrates, right? He was the one that said, let food be thy medicine, and let medicine be thy food. And as you all know, people are there with all kinds of conditions typically, and healing through really clean, organic, vegan food and exercise and improved attitude, I think it's a lot of it as well. All right, so that's where we're at. The last time we were together, it was 2 weeks ago. I can't remember where we were. We were in Sedona or somewhere. I can't even remember now. Was it something in Arizona? And so we've had a good 2 weeks. You know, we went through a little bit of a challenge. There was a big cold snap, and we were living in our little van going through Oklahoma. We had events in Oklahoma, and then in Little Rock with Kathy Christian. And then it got really cold. And then the next day was in Huntsville, Alabama, where I lived in a Zen center, which is no longer there. And we stayed in a hotel parking lot in our van. It went down to 18 degrees. And so Madeline was quite interested to see in the morning that we had frost on the inside of our windows of the van. And we enjoyed that. We heated it up once we started the engine and got on the road. And we had a really wonderful time in Chattanooga. And did some events there, and then in Atlanta, in Marietta, and then we came down here. And we really had a very nice evening with some people. So I don't think you know them, but they're longtime vegans, and they live on a sailboat. And Scott Bourgeois. You may have seen Scott Bourgeois if you're on Facebook. Yeah, Gene knows. So Scott and Kim, his wife, they're really amazing people. They have so many adventure stories to tell about their adventures on the high seas all over, you know, Nicaragua and Venezuela and all the way to New York City and up and down the coast all the way to South America, between South America and in New England, I guess. They live on this boat and travel. It's a sailboat, so they're sailing. And It's quite interesting to be with them. So yeah, so then we spent a few days at the state parks with the beautiful springs. The Leon Springs is our favorite up here, and the water comes out of the ground, crystal clear and beautiful, beautiful place to be. And my big work right now is the audiobook version of Food for Freedom. The book is, I've done the entire recording of Food for Freedom, also The World Peace Way, and also Your Inner Islands, The Intuition. I did all three of those right before we left. I was just recording like mad. And I realized that now I need to do the editing. And I did the editing of the World Peace Diet book also. And all I can say is it's really hugely time consuming. I've spent already dozens of hours and I'm only on chapter two. The editing, really got to go through every little breath and get it right. And so I don't see any other way around it. I guess people somehow pay editors to do that, but I thought I'll just do it myself. So we have our labor of love here that we're working on. And I'm hoping to have it done, you know, in maybe a month or so, and it'll be ready. Because a lot of people would rather listen to books than to read them nowadays. So we'll try to get that done soon. And then World Peace Way also. And thank you all so much for writing reviews on the World Peace Way and supporting our launch. We did hit number one on the World Peace Way in one of the categories, health and spirituality. So that was kind of cool. Not overall, but in that category. So that was cool. So thank you so much for your efforts on that. And it really helps, because then when that happens, then Amazon, it goes into the mathematical thing. And so then when people are looking for books, Amazon will recommend it. And so there'll be more of a chance that people will find it. So it really does help a lot to do that. And thanks. So really, thanks, everyone. So I see a hand up from our wonderful friend, Aradhana. And so how are you doing? You have something to share? It'd be great.
Oh, great. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for doing the vocal recording yourself and the editing. There is something really special when an author speaks his own work, and particularly you. I just think it will impart such depth that if you had paid another vocal artist to read your words, it just wouldn't have been the same. So I'm just really, really grateful, and I'm looking forward to it. So
thank you. You know, it's really, I tell you, I resisted this enormously, because I remember the hundreds of hours I put into the World Peace Diet. I mean, it went on forever, editing that dang thing. And I did not want to do it again, so I paid someone to do it. Like this guy, he's a professional, and he did. But the weirdest thing was, he told me he loved the book, he loved reading it, but he just wouldn't finish it. It was the weirdest thing. It went on, dragged on month after month, and he said, "Yeah, I'm almost there." And, you know, I came down with something, and something happened. He went on, and it kept not working. And then finally, I said, "You know, can you please finish it up? You know, because we had him started like way back in May, and he was supposed to have it done by July, and then August, and then September, and then October." Like, and so finally he just said, "I'll give you your money." I paid him half, you know, he said, "I'll give you your money back. I just can't finish it." So then there was another guy who was going to do it, and then he got sick also. And so then I thought, all right, this is the universe. I'm just going to do it myself. And then we were with our friends. They're always on every call, but they only listen to the recording. So there are friends up in Victoria, Christina and John McLarnon. And so they'll hear this recording later. But we were with them, and they were saying how most audio book recordings are just not very good. They don't really have the feeling. Even if the author does it, it doesn't have the feeling. They just kind of read it. And so then I thought, all right, I am going to really do this with feeling. So that's what I did. I really read it with feeling instead of just reading it, because it's two different ways you can do it. And it's quite an art. You know, they were saying it's only rare individuals can actually interpret a book vocally well. you know, it's kind of like a great musician being able to interpret a Mozart sonata or something. It takes an enormous amount of training, and you got to really understand it, and you got to be able to know what is being said and how to say it properly and all of that. And I thought, well, I mean, if anybody can do it, it's me. I wrote it, so I should be able to capture it somehow. So I really read all three of these books with that new, kind of a whole new foundation of understanding. They really helped with that idea. So now I've been going through the editing, and I have to say, it's a whole different thing. You know, I really read it like I meant it. And so now I want to get the editing so that, because when there's this every breath you have to take out, and some of the breaths, you want to just eliminate them, and some of them is where there's a comma or where there's a period, and then you've got to put in some blank space. So it's really an art to go through this thing and get it actually to flow the way it really should. And so that's what I'll probably be working on for the next few hundred hours when I'm looking at the computer. I'll be doing that. But I think it'll be good, because like with the World Peace Diet, I mean, here it is 20 years later and people are still buying it and still listening to it, you know, so I think it's worthwhile to do, you know. So thank you, Aradhana, for saying that. Because I know some of you, I know especially, well, a few, yeah, it was, yes, a few people, I can't remember, were saying you should do it yourself. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do it, you know, but I'm doing it now anyway. So thanks. So anyone else have any thoughts or questions or anything you'd like to bring up at this point? It's just us here. So yes, Gino, good to see you. Yeah, you're still muted. Now, okay.
I thought I was a professional at this by now. Anyway. yeah, I can't believe I'm going to say this, because I'm not an AI fan at all, although I recognize some value from it. But I wondered, if can AI be used to read your book? Because I've heard AI where, you know, they do emphasize as well. Words and different things. I don't know. Was that?
Well, that's a good question, you know, because that's what I did. I actually paid an AI firm and I chose a voice and I did the whole book. The whole Food for Freedom is on AI. I did it.
Oh.
And I not only, I mean, and I had to do quite a bit of editing of that AI recording to actually get it right, because the AI doesn't know how to say certain things. It was like a lot of work to get, and I put it up. I can put a link out. It is up there. You can listen to it by AI. Okay. I just think it's a little spooky somehow. It's because it's not a real voice. And then what I was going to do was do my own voice as an AI, because you can do that. You can actually pay them. You have to read for like 4 hours, 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours. You know, they want a lot. And then from that, they'll create your AI voice, and then they'll do it. But the problem is, still, Amazon will not accept AI. And Amazon is how they're all sold.
Really?
Yeah. So Amazon will not accept it. So iTunes, audio, the only way you can do it with them is through their AI, which is interesting. Or if you do your own. You can't use, I couldn't use my own AI. So this AI thing, I did, but I could only do it if I sold it myself on my own website or gave it out on my own website. So I could put it up, you know, I have given it out to people. There have been people say, I want the audiobook, and I send it to them because I do have it. But it's an AI voice. I mean, I could look it up, you know, here, but it's on our website as a link.
So when you did your voice AI, did it sound spooky?
I ended up not doing my voice AI. I decided not to do it. I picked another voice. I could have done my voice, but I realized it was kind of pricey, and then Amazon wouldn't take it anyway. So like, I might as well just do my own. I decided.
Yeah.
I will say for my novel, Marrying Myself, I didn't have control over the audiobook, and somebody else read the book, and I was so unhappy with it. I couldn't stand it. I thought it sounded like an AI voice, honestly. but they tell me it was a real person. I was devastated when I heard it, but
yeah.
You know, my only consolation that I took was people told me even a bad audiobook is better than no audiobook. So, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that's great that you're doing your own. Well, that's best for sure.
Thanks. Thanks, Christy. Yeah, well, you know, I do have a lot of experience with editing audio with all my music CDs. So, you know, I know what I'm doing somewhat, but this is still a different thing. But thanks for your, I know I've heard of quite a few audiobooks, and I mean, I don't listen to them that much. I like to read more, but still I tend to agree. They're not that good. So, and
can I throw a comment?
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. I was just going to say, you know, my phone went dead because the temperature got too hot, but it sounds like the conversation is going to exactly what I thought, which is, I do love listening now because I can be doing 1,000 other things. Like I can be out for a walk and listen to the book. And I really, hearing your voice would make all the difference. I know that. So thank you so much, but I know it's hard work.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it helps. Yeah. Yes, Anne.
I want to tell you how much I'm enjoying reading The World Peace Way.
Oh, thanks.
It's like I'm going slowly because I'm enjoying each chapter so much. You know, each one is just so insightful. And I really appreciated the way you described the seven deadly sins. And
right.
That was awesome. That was just awesome. You just nailed it. You know,
right. Yeah. How our entire society is basically glorifies pride and greed and gluttony and lust and all these things that in the past people thought, no, don't try to, you know, try to stay away from those things. And
I love the way you go right to it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think that's an important point because when a population indulges in those sins, then they're so much more easily controlled and dominated and enslaved. And if people are upright and do their best to be virtuous and really be kind and loving and conscious and aware and take responsibility for themselves and so forth, it's hard to control them. You know, and so it's really it's a double reason. You know, not only for ourselves but for our own freedom, but also spirituality, but also freedom. It really goes together. So, yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
And I also really appreciate when the author does the audiobook.
Mm.
Oh, it's got to be so much work. At least The World Peace Way is quite a bit shorter than
Patriot.
The thought of an AI voice, I'm reading those words that have so much meaning, just seems kind of hollow to me, a little bit creepy.
I know. Yeah, I feel the same way. I didn't want to have it by AI, but it was sort of like either that or spend hundreds of hours sitting in front of a computer. And, it seems like AI could do what I'm doing now. I could edit it, but in a way, it couldn't to do a really good job.
So did you go with? I thought that wasn't going to happen because Amazon wouldn't accept it, or what's the deal? Are you going to go?
The deal is I did an AI, and then. I realized afterward, actually, that Amazon would not take it. And then I realized Apple's iTunes wouldn't take it either. They only take their own AI. Amazon then subsequently said, well, we only take a human voice, or you can get into our pilot program because we're going to get into AI too, like everybody else. So they're opening up the door to AI. And I thought, well, I could try getting into their pilot program to get mine as an AI. And then I thought, I think I should. I'll just do it. I'll just do it. So that's what happened. Yeah. So everything's moving in the direction of AI, I think, unfortunately, and it's dangerous, quite honestly. But
I do too. But have you listened to a sample of your own voice spoken by AI?
I haven't. I haven't done that. So I don't know how it would be. I don't know. It probably wouldn't be that bad because, when I do a recording of myself, it's a recording of my voice, and it would be pretty much the same thing, it would just be, but it would be, I'm not sure about the pacing. I guess, this one company that I was going to go with is like supposedly the best there is, and they say they do a really good job, but I don't know. I never did it, so I don't know. Yeah.
AI can't feel.
I know. So that's what I felt when I was reading it after talking to John and Christine, you know, McLaren, and I thought, because they said, we can't stand listening to these audiobooks. They never did it. To them, it was like the first time they ever listened to an audiobook. They always just read. And our minds started wandering because the reading didn't capture us. It didn't grab us, you know. And then I thought, yeah, I gotta read it like it's gonna grab people. Like they're gonna like listen to it and say, wow, listen to this, you know. So that's the only way you can. So you need a human being, I think, to really do that, to read it with a sense of the feeling of the meaning in the words, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for doing. I know it's all a lot of work, but it's the product is amazing. So.
Thanks. Thank you. And thanks for buying a copy for the library. Do you have to buy it, or you just ordered it, I guess, right? The local library. Is that you that did that? Or no, that was somebody else. Another mm-hmm. Ann. Sorry. Yeah, we have two Anns. Another one. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Ann. Yeah. Let's see. I got another hand up from Gino and also Tammy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just a quick comment, follow up to my thought of even using AI and, I feel like Ann does, you know, and you and others, that, you know, I think if AI is going to be reading a book, to me it has to be something that's superficial or staid or not anything that requires any feeling. I can see how that could be useful. Okay, here's a recipe book or whatever. But when you're talking about, you know, the animals and all of this, or spirituality, all of this, you want to have something real. You know, now I can see how you could get a professional who would know how to do that, just like you would get a good actor to play a part in a film. But I think, you know, ideally, yes, the author reading it would be ideal. But then, like you said, even sometimes an author has no skill set to do that.
That's the problem. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I kept, 'cause I did quite a bit of research on this, and I talked to different. There's companies, there's quite a few companies that all they do is match up voice talent with books because Amazon publishes thousands and thousands and thousands of audiobooks. So there's companies that do that. And that's what these executives say. They said, you know, 99% of authors can't read out loud and make it sound good. You know, they're good at writing, but they can't articulate. They're not speakers. So it's better to have a professional speaker read their book than have them try to do it. And so they were kind of discouraging me from doing it. They said, you ought to have a professional. Of course, that's how they made their money was have me hire somebody to do that for them. And I thought about it. That's how I got this one guy, actually, and who did it. And then the other thing, of course, is this is a book that's a pro-vegan book, and you have a non-vegan reading this, you know, book trying to make it sound convincing, but he's not even a vegan, right? So I was already, like, wondering if that's really going to work, you know, because – you know, there's all these overtones that because the voice, you know, the voice is carries a lot of energy, really, I think. And maybe it's better to just have it as authentic as possible, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point. Thanks, Gino. Tammy, you have your hand up up in Canada, I guess. There she is. Yeah, you're still muted. You're still. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Hello, everyone. Happy solstice. We're almost to the winter. So remember to do something really sacred to celebrate the light within us all. And I'm sorry, Chrissy, about your book. I think that would be such a drag. And I just wanted to say, well, you know, the audiobook's interesting because I was studying with Dr. Gabriel Cousins. I took a master's in live food nutrition with him. And man, he had a big expectation of his students. There was a lot of reading. And I was helping set up a juice bar for about 2 weeks in Mexico during the winter. I went there and I just decided to just go there and study for a couple of weeks. And you were on our list of reading material, but you had your book on audio. And it was such a nice break to just sit in the sun and listen. And you talk about the resonance, the voice, you know, I could feel who you were through your voice, the resonance of your voice, right? And you just can't get that. And even if someone they convince isn't really good at doing audio, like I really want to do some of my work on audio, but it's so time consuming. You really have to carve out some time. But, you know, people get something from that. And, you know, if we're not, because this is a spiritual community that we're in right now, that is the power of it. You know, the words are part of it, but the power is what you're conveying from who you are as a being. And I felt that. So thank you for that. So I'm glad you're reading your second book.
Thank you, Tammy. Yeah, that helps. When I'm sitting there, I mean, in the little van, like hours of just cutting and out breaths and moving things and doing it's quite. But you know, in a way, I was thinking it's kind of like going on a meditation retreat, you know, where you just sit there for 10 hours a day. I'm going to sit there and just do my book for 10 hours a day. And it'll get done. So thank you.
I just wanted to mention one more thing, if I could, please.
Uh-huh.
I was put in touch through a grandmother community. We do 22 prayers every month. Chief Elaine was one of the starters of these women coming together. And there's one of the women in this community, and she's part of her own community. Her name is Dr. Shelley Ostroff. She wrote The Codes for a Healthy Earth. And every year, she gives a free offering the first 7 days of January, and it's called 7 days of Rest. So it's the number 7. I'll put the link. And, you know, it's such a gift. You know, she's found some of the most well-versed people on the power of rest, from Nidra, teaching on Nidra to, so there's meditations, there's offering. I've often done the nutrition part of it. So 7daysofrest.org. Did you find it there, Will?
7 days of rest. I've heard of that. She's done this every year for 4 or 5 years, I think, right?
7 now. Yeah, but it's such a beautiful experience. So I just wanted to invite everyone starting the new year to, if you want to tap into that, because I'm always changed after.
Thank you. So, and maybe you can write it on in the chat, 7daysofrest. Is that what it is, .org?
Yeah.
The number 7. Great. Yeah. So basically you go online and there are suggestions for each of the 7 days for activities that you do together or on.
Well, you don't necessarily do them together. There's different offerings, different windows. There's lots of prayers. There's teaching. There's musicians. There's people teaching yoga. You know, this one Nidra Yoga Uma that they found, Nidra Yoga teacher that's studied the power of deep rest. Because just in the world that we live in, you know, we've really kind of have to unwind from the notion that we're human doings.
Right.
It always brings me back to, you know, the reminder of that it isn't that. So, because that's hard. It's difficult when you're in this world. So that's what it does. So thank you.
Do you do anything yourself for this? Are you providing something?
I've done the nourishment, deep nourishment component for a few years. I didn't do it last year, but I did it 2 years before that. So I have some really fun demo videos on there, and because I love teaching. So this time I'm going to be doing an offering on fasting, but 3 different types of fasting. So fasting in thought that doesn't support to try to, you know, encourage us to spend 7 days fasting, you know, through thought that doesn't support life. And it's really crazy. I can't even get through a day without catching myself over and over again. And then different types of fasting. So everything from Gabriel Cousins juice fasting to the power of, you know, water fasting if you can't even do juice fasting. And then different types of just allowing the body to go into a deep rest. So maybe just really short windows of time. Maybe you're having one meal a day that's living food or something and you're fasting for another 22 hours and just giving. Yeah. So I'm going to just teach 3 different pieces. One of resting our thoughts, and then resting our mental state, and then resting our physical body.
And is Shelley Ostroff, that name is very familiar. Is she in the vegan community, or is she more in the consciousness community?
She's definitely in the conscious community, but she's vegan. They are so conscious. Dr. Shelley Ostroff and Jan Golding, her partner.
Is she from South Africa?
Yes, she's from South Africa.
Yeah.
But she's vegan all the way, but she doesn't, she has a different way of her teaching. So she brings a lot of the elders and stuff in there that may be doing prayers. They might not all be vegan. Chief Elaine, as far as I know, is vegan now.
Really?
Uh-huh. Which is amazing. Yeah, him and his wife got really sick after a COVID shot.
Oh,
and
wow.
He spoke openly about it. And I was teaching the 7 days of rest, and he kind of went with the food menu. I think it might have been the first year I was teaching. And he said they both felt better. And then I just recommended a few other things that Gabriel recommends, is some iodine and some NAC and some other things. And then, Silas talked to him a lot about, you know, if we don't need to, because we're not doing it in the traditional way, and our wildlife is almost gone anyways. And yeah, they went vegan. And I don't know whether he stayed. He doesn't talk openly about it, but still, it's still awesome, you know? Yeah.
That's great. I know the Native Americans, I think, have a tendency toward veganism. The love of nature and the feeling of the community, the communal feelings they have. So it could be natural to them, I think, to move in that direction. Thanks so much for sharing, Tammy. That's so great.
Thank you for having me. Really good to see everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. Julie, so good to see you. And Fred, thank you for joining us. Do you have your hand up?
Yes, I do. Fred just told me that the lights are bad here and you couldn't see me. So he told me to shut my camera off so at least you could see my hand up. But anyway, I wanted to agree, first of all, that 7 days of rest is great. It's a great program. I did like a 40-minute program on it a couple of years ago, and it's up on YouTube. I could put it in the link if anybody requested it. But very, very good people, good program, you know, worldwide, all of that. Excellent, excellent idea and concept, too. But mainly what I wanted to talk about was the wild world of AI, because I'm quite a fan of it. I know that doesn't make me popular, but I've been playing with it to make it as natural and as real. And, I think the best use of AI is to clone your own voice. Like, you can do this, like, for $22 a month, so you can go on to 11 labs and clone your own voice. And it's best to use it for shorter things. Like, I toyed with cloning your voice and just sending you your vegan the messages that you put up every day. I can't think of the word right now. But
the veg inspirations for the day, right.
Yeah, like take something like that long and test it and send it to you just for giggles. So if you want me to, if you want to see what that would sound like, I could do that for you. And on short stuff, it's just really excellent. And I use it to create videos. I've used it for artwork. And now lately, my big passion is creating vegan songs using AI. And they've really come out amazingly well. Like, I can ask for a rock song. I can ask for a trancey song. I can ask for a live audience. Like, everything in the world, country, western, whatever you ask for, they're going to do it. And they're going to do it to your parameters. And it's really just a gas. You know, it's so much fun. Granted, I think that everybody's right that you're doing your voice, your real voice for your book is a gift to the world. And I'm not trying to argue with that or put that over. But I know how busy you are. And every once in a while, it's just really handy to do this because you don't have to take any breath out, because that's not like an issue.
Right.
And
I know. Yeah.
Perfect. I know for me, I looked into it because we live in an old house here in Massachusetts, and especially in the winter, it is so noisy from the heating alone. So every time the heat would come on or off, I'd have to edit that out. Every time a car goes by or a plane, I'd have to edit it out. You know what I'm talking about. It just is like you would spend an hour and a half reciting something and you do it really well, but there's still all this noise you have to take out. So it takes 5 hours to edit and like an hour and a half's worth of stuff. At least it does me. And that was not even with taking voice out. So I can't imagine how long it would take with the voice. But if I'll email you about this. And if you want me to shoot you a short passage of your own voice, I think you'll be quite pleasantly amazed. Just for giggles.
And
you know, I don't expect you to do anything out of it, but I already own the program to do this. I can clone like as many voices as I want. It would take me no time at all to just put up a minute of your voice, just like I could copy a minute out of the satsang that you did, slice that out, send it in, and then they would read your voice, and they would make something that sounds exactly like you. It's really extraordinary.
Oh, okay. So you could do it. I wouldn't have to join up with 11 labs.
You don't have to join anything. I'll just do it as a test and send it to you for giggles. See what you
All right. Thanks.
It's fun.
It's very
it's
nice
really
of you to offer that. That's very
no problem. My pleasure for all you do. You know, I like to send you stuff that's funny once in a while, but this isn't even funny. This is really good, but it's definitely better on short pieces. Like, I wouldn't want to do a program that was more than like 10, 12 minutes this way.
Yeah.
Because there are some things I would have to change, you know, and I do a lot of audio and video editing like you do. I'd have to change like an inflection. I'd just go back in and paste it over. But it would get time consuming if it was a longer program than that. But there's so many things we can do that are 10 minutes or so that would just take a big amount of time off the plate. And I believe no one would know the difference, you know, in that application, especially if you put music behind it. It's really something. So I'll do that for you. Let's check it out. It's called 11 Labs, too, if anybody wants to look into it.
11 Labs. That was actually the one I was using, was 11 Labs.
Did you try the club?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
It didn't come out well for you?
Well, no, I did one for that one I mentioned. I got one of their voices to do my entire book. You know, you pick a voice and you give the entire book and it just does it
in 2 seconds. I got all the other voices too.
But then I had to do quite a bit of editing. And then I did create it. But then to get my voice, they wanted about 3 hours of me reading to really do the book and to get my voice. And then I didn't go any farther. I didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll do that. That's easy for me.
All right. Andy, thank you. Thanks so much, Julie.
Sure. Andy,
yeah.
Hi. Sorry. I guess I just wanted to throw out an extra opinion on that whole AI thing. You know, I recognize it can be fun. It can be effective. It seems like it's incredible with completely duplicating people's voices, people's images, everything. And I happened to be watching something. It was either Britain's Got Talent or something that Simon Cowell. And if anyone wants to look it up on YouTube, if you look up Simon Cowell singing, what they did was it was some type of AI thing, and someone else was doing the singing, but they made the image look like Simon Cowell was literally doing the singing. And so, of course, it's incredible. Of course, it's amazing. But it terrifies the hell out of me. Because just living in the world that we do right now where there's so much deception, and I always felt, well, if I hear and know someone says something themselves, then I know it's the truth. But now with AI, they can make it look like anybody's saying anything. And so unless you're literally with the person right there in front of you, it's like we're never going to know what's real and what's a lie. So that's my reason for not being fond of that at all. And yet I recognize, of course, it can be fun. Of course, it can be effective in doing so many things. But I just also find it absolutely terrifying because of how people are using it these days. And I don't know, maybe you didn't want my negative opinion here, so I apologize. Okay, that's all.
Thanks. I have a similar feeling. I mean, I've seen a little bit online about what they call deep fakes, it's what you're talking about. I mean, you can have a famous person speaking and saying the exact opposite of what they really believe.
Yes.
Put it out there to on YouTube or whatever. And what are they supposed to do? You know, like, that's not me. I mean, there's enough. I mean, already the deception in our society is through the roof. And this is, this adds another layer of ammunition, really, to those who would like to deceive others. And as I write about in Food for Freedom, you know, deception is a way of, violating people that they don't even know they're being harmed. You know, you're deceiving them, and they end up giving, you know, losing their money and their lives to the deception and still think you're the best friend, you know? So it's something really demonic and, you know, I think, you know, satanic on that level. It's like the worst type of criminal behavior. And that's why it's so important for us to protect ourselves. I mean, to be mindful of where, whatever it is that we're watching and reading, and not be taken in by the psyops that are everywhere. And AI can be used certainly for that, I think, for psyops even more. I mean, it can be a tool for that. Probably already is. I mean, I'm sure it is already. Mm-hmm. So thank you for reminding us about that. And I think meditation is really helpful on one level. I mean, to slow down enough to be able to think a little bit about or be aware of what is the agenda behind whatever it is I'm seeing, and to begin to question the appearances, but to realize also that we live in a world now where, like, you know, they call fifth generation warfare, where it's the battlefield is no longer so much in the outer world. It's much more the minds of the people that you're trying to control. And when you have a situation where 1/10,000th of 1% of the people have the money and the power to control the narratives in the media, they can use these tools and many other ones as well to make us believe things that aren't the way they are and scare us, basically. Like I mentioned, this whole they're sowing the seeds, it seems to me anyway, of another pandemic with a bird flu. I mean, I can't believe how anyone would take this seriously, but they're already doing something like that. And so I think it's really important to inoculate ourselves spiritually so that we're immune to this kind of deception. And even if someone comes out that we trust saying something, then either it's a deep fake, or maybe that person's been bought off, or who knows what. But we have to really, more than ever, stay deeply connected to the inner locus of wisdom to be able to tell what's going on, and to be able to discriminate and discern fact from truth from error, fact from fiction. And, we thought the computer would be our great friend to help us do that. But in many ways, it can easily be used against us, not only for surveillance, but also for creating realities that aren't true. And people don't know. I mean, they see something on TV and they think that must be true because it's on TV. They have a video of people dying in the hospital or people getting killed or all these things. And later you find out it was a total fake. So more than ever, this is happening. And you would think, of course, that vegans would be the most savvy of all, because we're questioning the main delusion in our society about animal foods. But sadly, it's not that way, as we, you know, we're the survivors here among the vegan community. who all kind of went off the cliff, most of them, and I think they're still down there somewhere. So, this whole thing with climate change is going on. I mean, all these things are going on, like in flus and in wearing masks. I mean, it's probably coming back again. So we really need to be able to continue to discern well and communicate as best we can an alternative view of reality. Yeah, it's challenging, but thanks. Yeah, thanks everyone for these great ideas. Yes, Anne, did you have your hand up, or
I'm not sure? I didn't have my hand up. Sorry, I'm just opening my mouth. But I just appreciate what Andy said about the dangers of, you know, using AI in that way, and just to look at it in terms of vibration, like just take away the idea of what it is and just what would be the resonance and the vibratory energy of a Will Tuttle voice versus a clever AI imitation. Like, I love the way, you know, David Hawkins in his book, you know, assigned, I don't know how he did it. He would come up with a number for all these different elements of the universe in terms of their vibration.
Right.
But I just feel I see more of the dangers of an AI generated thing more than the benefits. I just wanted to put that.
Right. Well, you're right. It's I think, you know, I have a little bit of experience with David Hawkins too, and it's interesting. I ran into him when I was at Unity Village years ago, and he was there to give the Sunday morning message. And they had it was back when Unity Village in Kansas City, Missouri, it was big. You know, they probably had 500 people in the audience, and I was there to play the piano for the service. And so he and I met together before the service with the minister, and he's a really high energy guy. You know, he was kind of jumping up and down. We were kind of holding hands, and we're getting ready for the service and to bring the energy through. It's all about energy. And he uses muscle testing to know what, you know, like he has this ranking of states of consciousness from, I can't remember, from 100 to 200, 300, up to maybe 800 or something. And, I think it's, you know, he can just tell. He's done it for decades. He can tell, he says, you know, what level something is at, a book or someone's consciousness or music or whatever it was. And I really liked him, you know. And I think that what you're saying is very important. The level of vibratory frequency. If it gets, the higher it goes, the more pure and more liberated, really, it is. And, but it was interesting because I played the piano and he was absolutely gushing afterwards. I played a couple of pieces during the service and he said that he had never experienced piano music or any music that had such a high vibration. And he invited me he had a center in Sedona and he wanted us to come to Sedona and work with him. With music, he said, your music is like 700. I've never seen 700 music before, you know. And then I was talking to him, and I was talking to his students, and I found out, you know, he's eating meat, you know. So we said, we're not going to go there. I think on some level, that's a big thing, you know, the vibratory level. I mean, if we're eating animal-based foods, there's a vibration in the food also that we're supporting and that we're embodying. And so I think it's so great when we can try to create a way of life that raises the vibration of our consciousness, but also of everyone else around us as much as possible to minimize violence. And so food is a really big thing. And I'm not sure, there's so many people that I love who are really caring about freedom and creativity and vibration, and they're still eating animal foods, animal source foods, which to me seems like a major disconnection. No matter how I look at it, I still think it's not necessary. I mean, here I am 44 years and there's millions of people that are long-term vegans and are doing fine. We should really take that more seriously, I think. But he didn't want to. The people I talked to them, some of his senior students, and it just seemed like they thought it's no big deal. You know, we bless the food, you know, we raise the vibration by blessing it or something like that. And so I said, we should read the World Peace Diet, you know. That's about all I could do. But thanks for bringing these really important ideas. Because the thing with AI, I guess the thing that bothers me, I guess, is the actual act of digitizing something, right? You have, like the world is analog. The world is analog, but when we create an audio recording or a video recording and it's digital, we convert everything to ones and zeros, right? It's just, and something happens in that, I think. Something, you can do it, you can have a really high, you know, very high resolution, but it's still just a high resolution. It's not it, right? So, I think it's something about it. And then if you study Rudolf Steiner, you know, he talks about not only Lucifer, but Ahriman. You know about Ahriman? You know, I learned about this from Madeline because she went, you know, she's a Waldorf teacher and Steiner student. But Ahriman is this being, this Lucifer who kind of wants to take over from God and can do a better job kind of. And he has this tremendous sort of pride. is that idea, that Luciferian energy that I think we have as human beings, that we want to create, we want to be creators also, and we can maybe do a better job, and we can create. Is that a book? Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Lucifer and Ahriman, right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so Ahriman is kind of the technological side. So like when we had our RV, you know, right under the sink, I had our inverter and I had our converter and I had, you know, all this electronic stuff down there. Madeline called that Ahriman's cave. That was that's where all electronics were. And I would go into Ahriman's cave and, you know, I had to kind of, you know, keep everything running. But it's this electrical energy that we use that runs through the computers. It runs through everything. It's running right now while we're talking. It's, you know, all of this. But there's something about it, you know, that I think it's very tempting and it kind of pulls us in to this way of thinking and being in relating, really, I think relating to the natural world, and we kind of lose touch with the natural world. I mean, I think that's what it is. We just basically lose touch with the natural world. And I think it's a manifestation in many ways of animal agriculture over 10,000 years. I've always been reading for the last 40 years. I've been reading books written by and about the ancient Chinese Zen masters and some of the great Indian sages from, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago. And I'm always struck when you read about these people living back then, like the Chinese Zen masters living in these monasteries and temples in 400, 500, 600 A.D., you know, going back, you know, almost 2,000 years ago, how way ahead of us they were. I mean, they were so far more advanced in their understanding of reality. I mean, in the subtlety of the philosophical arguments that were thousands and thousands of people were engaging in these, more than that. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people were engaging in these very sophisticated philosophical arguments about the nature of reality and whether it's mind and matter and how it interfaces and getting to places of such deep, profound silence where they were spiritually awakening to whole other levels, and whole communities of people were doing this. And I think of that sophistication and awareness that was manifesting, and what did they have for technology? Then they were making, you know, food on wooden fires, and they didn't have anything. Apparently they had to carry their own wood and water and live in the cold and the heat. And yet they had this tremendous peace. And I mean, there were, you know, all kinds of politics going on. And, you know, it was so interesting to read about how when Bodhidharma came to China, he learned from this other guy who came from India earlier. This was interesting. I mean, this guy, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Lisa. I read about him today. He's a great teacher from India. This is what they say. I mean, this is what they say. They say he came from India. I can't think of his name. Gunabhadra, I think it is. In the year around 200 AD, one of the first ones to come from India to China as a Buddhist monk, because, you know, the Buddha was like 500 BC. At the time he came to India, he was already 630 years old. And he then studied, he was a Buddhist teacher, and he studied. And after 300 years, Bodhidharma came over, who was the great first patriarch of Zen Buddhism in China. He came from India in Guangzhou. He landed in Guangzhou, then he went across the Yangtze River, and he ended up in Nanjing, something like that. This other guy, Gunabhadra, was there already, and he had a great following, and the emperor wanted to. The emperor had a cousin who wanted to take over the emperor. He wanted to become the emperor himself, so he led a rebellion against the emperor because he thought he could do a better job. He was a Buddhist and he thought he had higher morals. And he got this guy Gunabhadra to go along with him and lead this rebellion. And so the emperor won the rebellion and killed this guy. And he was going to kill Gunabhadra, but then he said, well, what really happened? And he found out that this great Gunabhadra, who was at that point was like 800 years old, and he was highly, you know, very esteemed by all the Chinese, that he, you know, he had advised him not to rebel against the emperor, so he was allowed to live. He then studied under Bodhidharma, who had come over in the meantime, and attained enlightenment at the age of 900. And then this is the story anyway. He's called Lao Tzu, the old teacher. And then he continued on. He lived, according to the story, he lived until he was 1100 years old. But and finally passed away on this mountain. And it's apparently, the way that he talked about it, it's like it's a story that people in China, everybody knows. And they talk about, they have a little sayings of how he lived and studied and died in this beautiful, you know, in the 1100th year on this mountain, beautiful mountain. And but I guess the idea was that he, you know, he learned from his experience, and Bodhidharma learned also to stay away from the emperors, to stay away from the political intrigues, and just have their Zen Buddhism be off in the mountains and stay away and grow their own food and be independent of the government. And so they tried to maintain that independence from the government. But reading all of this, there's just such a feeling of the richness of the culture and the people and their spirituality and all that was going on. And I look at that and compare it, quite honestly, to the kinds of things that are going on in our world, where most people, the level of real spiritual depth is really lacking. Even with all of our technology, it seems like it's a big distraction. So, and all of these monks, they were all vegan. I mean, there's huge, vast numbers of people. They didn't eat meat, dairy, or eggs. I mean, they were living as vegans. All of these, you know, this whole movement. So, it's good, I think, to realize that there's a tremendous rich heritage in the human experience of people really devoting themselves to spiritual awakening, to compassion for animals, to going for the highest understanding and creating community, supporting that. And, you know, we now have these cities where people are crammed in. And sometimes I think, you know, when you see a city, when there's people are crowded in there, and when they do these experiments on mice and rats and so forth, they usually find that when they get overcrowded, they start getting really nasty to each other, and going kind of a little bit kind of crazy. And I'm wondering if that's kind of what's happening in our world today. We need to get back to the land more, connect more with nature. Have gardens, really be proactive in doing our best to extract ourselves from the technological overlay that wants to digitize everything, it wants to make everything into ones and zeros, you know, this kind of artificial human world that disconnects us from the immediacy of the cold water and the sun, and maybe we're hungry, but to have a mind, that we have our own mind. You know, our mind isn't being invaded by all these forces, all the media and all the input. It's very challenging nowadays, I think, to really go deep in meditation, given the huge amount of input we have. So again, I think it's important to be aware of these things and then try to do the best we can to navigate the situation. I know Madeline says I'm spending too much time on the computer trying to figure everything out. And I like to spend time every day, of course, always do in meditation, but to realize the importance of that and to maybe remember that our technology can really distract us from the deeper meanings of life. So anyway, I don't know what to make of this guy who lived to be 1100 years old, but I think there's something intriguing about these things, because there's a lot of things that our modern science would say are impossible. Like, because then the fourth patriarch, where he's, which was a few generations later, and this is not just with him, but with quite a few of these Zen masters, they would die and then their bodies wouldn't decompose. It was very interesting. They would just stay fresh, you know, for like weeks, sometimes even months. And I remember myself when I was a monk in Korea, when someone dies, I think I probably told this story, but when someone dies, when a monk dies, they always cremate the body. And there's never anything there, typically. There's just some bones and gray ashes and things. But when it's an enlightened Zen master, because Kusan Sunim was there, I had met him. He was my teacher for a while. And he was the real deal. He would walk around and challenge the monks and say things like, all right, so when a boulder sprouts an eyeball, what does that mean? And you know, the monks had to speak up right away and answer him, you know, or he would say, nope, you got to get back and meditate if you don't understand what that means. And so when he died, eventually they cremated him. And sure enough, going through those ashes, there were these sarira, they're called, these they're jewels. I mean, they're beautiful. I saw them. They were on display, red and blue and green and black, shiny. And the bones were like rainbow colored. It's something really does change, I think, in the, like you're saying, with the vibratory, when we raise our vibratory level of consciousness of our mind, our body and mind are not separate. And I think something, you know, does change. And you don't get that by reading books or any of this stuff. It really comes from purifying our mind, purifying our consciousness so that we're a vehicle for truth to come through. And that's really, I think, something that each one of us can make an effort in that direction. And when we do, it's one of the greatest gifts we can give humanity is the work we do on ourselves, because then we begin to embody the teachings rather than trying to argue about it and convince people of these things. So thank you for all your efforts, everyone, for in that direction. Andy, yes, you have your hand up.
Okay, so a couple things you said about going off and living on the land and that type of thing. And the thing that scares me, so the two things I want to remember mentioning about feeling like they're narrowing us into the slaughterhouse, that's my next issue. But I met two people who had homes. And these were areas where I guess the government or, you know, I mean, no government would admit this, but I guess they burned down homes in the neighborhoods, you know, where all this, it was similar to like paradise, where it's like, okay, the trees aren't burning, but the homes and the cars are burning down. And, you know, so that, the very fact that I met two people and I've known of they're doing this in so many places, that terrifies me of considering like what a lot of people are doing, the moving off grid. And yet where I'm living right now, it's one of the worst areas for the whole 15-minute city thing. And literally when I was just when our phone call was, your phone call here was starting, I was starting to get in traffic that it's like every day now I feel like what they've done to the roads, which is literally removing so many driving lanes and replacing them with bike lanes or these, you know, decorative planting type shrubbery or whatever. And I feel like we're being corralled in on our way to the slaughterhouse. Like they're narrowing the lanes. We're not allowed to escape anywhere. And it's like the exact opposite of when they're building highways. They're doing the exact opposite. And they're, you know, these huge residential complexes. And so there's two roads that I just don't even want to take them anymore because you can't drive down them. And I'm looking at people like, when are they going to speak up? I've tried to talk to the freedom people and everybody is saying things like, oh, you know, people are going to wake up and I'm just going within myself. And I'm like, okay, as they're pushing us into the slaughterhouse and people want to go within. So that I'm not getting at all. I'm just like, you know, I don't, you know, there's a thousand things I want to do. Like I watch these videos of people, and I don't know if it was like Great Britain or somewhere, where they're literally, people are going in and taking down the surveillance systems. But, you know, I want to go out every night with groups of people and start spray painting all of this construction saying, you know, things like totalitarianism in progress. And I want to protest where the construction workers are. And there's one or possibly two people that might have an interest in doing this. And the other people just want to, almost 5 years later, scream at the Board of Supervisors like that's going to make a difference. And they just sit there and ignore people and they laugh at everyone. And it's almost like they get pleasure saying they can interrupt people at any point and saying, oh, you're going off topic. Okay, your time is up, blah, blah, blah. And people still go there and talk to them as if they care, as if they serve us. And they don't. So I'm, you know, I'm just at a point where, I mean, I'm just screaming and swearing in my car all the time when I'm driving now. So what you're talking about, yes, we do go crazy. It's like, you know, suddenly you have certain freedoms and they're disappearing. And I guess what really scares me is the same thing I saw in 2020 is, what is wrong with the people? I don't blame the politicians or the Nazis who are giving the orders, you know, like Newsom does. It's all the people who don't want to do anything about it. They just want to go about living their days. And I'm like, if people were just willing to do something, you know, take action, go to the construction workers, let them know they're building their prisons, you know, let them know the risks, the dangers. I don't know. Am I the only one that feels this way? But it's the people that scare me, not the politicians. Anyway, so that's
right.
All.
Well, you know, that's, if you ever have a chance to see it, I saw the replay of a section of this old movie from the 1980s, I think it was, My Dinner with Andre. And did you ever see that movie, My Dinner with Andre? And it's about this guy, Andre, who travels around the world and sees all these different things, and with this guy, Wally. And Wally's this sort of guy that just listens with wide open eyes and his jaw down, you know, as Andre tells him about Europe and all these different things. And at one point, Andre tells him, you know, what New York City, these big cities, what they are really are, they're psychiatric wards where the residents are the guards. You know, the residents are the guards, and they
yes.
They won't let anyone leave. Once you get in there, they'll make sure you stay there, and they'll tell you you got to stay here. And you know, this is back in the 1980s. I thought, you know, this is something that has been kind of obvious in a way that it does something, I think, to people to be in these situations. But the what you're talking about, I think, with the 15-minute cities that are basically, that's why the whole climate change thing, that's why they're pushing that. That's the agenda, is that we have anthropogenic climate change, so we need 15-minute cities, and nobody can grow their own food, nobody can be on the land, that's too much carbon, and yeah, all this stuff, which really, I'm feeling like, you know, vegans have got to stop going along with the agenda of climate change, because that's a complete enslavement agenda. But that, you know, that's the situation. We just have to speak up and not comply, I guess, essentially, like you're doing. I mean, what you're doing is great. I think the more we just speak up and don't comply, just don't comply, you know, as much as we can, refuse and spread the word to other people, because that's it. I mean, if people just allow the educational system, which has dumbed them down, to keep them dumbed down, and continue to trust authorities and trust experts, then we'll be enslaved by those. The experts are doing the bidding of the technocrats that are running everything at the top, the plutocrats or the oligarchs, whatever you want to call the super wealthy. I mean, that's pretty clear, I think. So the we have the numbers, and the whole idea is to not allow them to spook us anymore. Like I write about that in the World Peace Society. You know, they're really good at spooking us, and we run here, and we run there, we run around like, oh, I'm afraid of that. You know, wear my mask and get my vaccine and do this. Oh, now it's global warming. We got to all stay in the city and don't. I mean, we should be by now. We should be able to tell a psyop, right? A psyop. The main way you can tell a psyop is if it's going to give the government more power and more centralized control, right? If they have some kind of a thing, like some whatever it is, and it's taken over the media, then it's a lie. It's a psyop. And so we have to understand that and tell people, don't you know how to recognize a psyop by now? I mean, it's pretty obvious. We've had 9/11. We had so many of them. And by now, it should be pretty clear that every time they do, they just put us more and more into a prison and keep ratcheting it up. So we have to not be fooled by these psyops anymore and be willing to take the heat, I guess, from people that don't like to have their favorite authority questioned. I think that's really what's going on. And I see a lot of good things happening. People are, I think, breaking out of the consensus trance. But the best way to get them to break out of the consensus trance is examples of people who are not in it, right? Like the consensus trance of eating meat, the best way to get people out of that is to be a vegan and be a healthy, happy vegan and be public about it. And the same thing about everything else, you know, driving a car or whatever, or not getting vaccinated and all these things. So
at least what I did a few days ago when I was so furious about the traffic, I finally turned around, went in another direction, and there was more traffic, but the bike lane was open. I was so angry at them stealing my driving lane that I drove all, no one was on the bike lane. I just completely drove on the bike lane, and I'm sure all these people were upset with me, but I saved about a half an hour because I took the bike lane. And, you know, it's just, I will, it's almost like I'll do anything now to break the law if I think I'm not going to get caught. You know, just to take my rights back. And I have, like, you posted something today about the whole climate change hoax, the Jimmy Dore thing. And so do you remember that?
I don't think I posted it today. I'm not sure. It must have been somebody else, or maybe it was something that came up later or earlier or something.
So all these people like Bill Gates, the people that have their private jets who are promoting the climate change. So I posted that on the local DXE San Diego, the animal rights thing, because a lot of them bought into the whole thing. And I'm like, you know, these are the people promoting the climate change. So I will post whatever I can anywhere. And you promoted the JP thing on the vegans. And so I made a comment there like, okay, now that you've had the courage to look into how the vegan meat is made, do you have the courage to look into how the non-vegan turkeys are made? And can you also look at, because the majority of people who don't want to look at it and don't want to kill their own animals, if you don't care about animals, consider all the workers who cannot keep up with those assembly lines and stabbing them. So anyway, I try to educate the freedom people also who are not vegan on every comment I can make everywhere. So, and I'm trying to be respectful because they won't look at it if I'm not. So anyway, but thank you for posting all those good things that I can repost.
Thanks, Andy. That's great. Yes, Gino, you had your hand up, I think. Yeah, you're still muted.
I can't believe me
today. Okay, now.
yeah, I think you covered most of what I wanted to say. Just a couple of things, I think. Andy, two things that you said tonight. One about the 15-minute cities. Yes, I realize that that's happening. And, you know, Will went into a large thing about there's so many other things. And, you know, the society is built that way. This is how we're going to run for a while. You know, the media controls us, the government, fear, all this stuff is controlling us all the time. And if we can get through it all and still buy our, you know, T-shirts at Target, you know, it's all good. And so that's okay. And so we got a ways to go. You know, I mean, one thing I heard not, you know, several times was, you know, that people would just boycott and not buy any products. And that would be hugely effective. And that's not violence in the streets. There's so many things that people could do, but people aren't quite ready yet. And I think things are just coming to a head where I think that something is coming. I feel that. I really do. Mm-hmm. And in terms of AI, yeah, I mean, I don't think we've even seen even a small part of what AI is going to be able to do. And humans being the way they are, if we aren't all going to wake up in the not too distant future, that AI is going to get much, much worse. You know, I mean, just think, you know, with animals, it started off with small farms. And now what do we got? You know, billions of animals and land and sea being killed every year. Also related to music, I treasure music. And I have since I was a little boy, you know, singing on the front steps of the apartment building my mom lived in as a single mom with my little transistor and singing along to Bobby V. You know, I mean, I thought I was the greatest singer in the world. And that's how it started for me. And I'm not the greatest singer in the world, but I like to sing and I'm not a bad singer. So I create music, you know, the best I can and post it and everything. And often it's so related to social justice.
Uh-huh.
I feel that that's a contribution. So that's precious to me. So if AI is just creating music, and it sounds like, okay, it sounds like a 1950s song and it's well done and everything, but there's some soul lacking in there. Now, I saw something the other day that I thought was funny at first, but then I thought, well, what if they keep going with that? And that was that they had the Led Zeppelin song got a whole lot of love, and they did it 1950s style, you know? And it was kind of funny, but I thought, they could do a lot more with that and go off on it. Now they're starting to get videos of all the different groups, Black Sabbath, all these different groups from the 60s, revolutionary groups, and they're doing doo-wop songs and everything with it, you know, and I just, I can't get into it. So music is precious to me. That's just one art. There are so many different kinds of arts that are going to be affected. Painters, you know, writers, the whole deal. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's there's so much we could go into there. I really feel that the arts are the way for us to flower and bloom and celebrate and change and we're being the arts are being deliberately turned against us. I think they're being weaponized against us in a lot of ways. Art, architecture, music, you know, sort of bringing us down instead of up. And what you're talking about is like AI could compound that even more. I mean, obviously, doing things that we could never even imagine doing. We're getting close to the end of our time. Arad and I, we have just a minute here. Madeline is right here. We're ready to kind of we'd like to wrap it up at 9:30 Eastern time. But yes, please unmute yourself.
Super quick question.
Yeah.
I remember you mentioning you were going to at some point be doing a collaboration, some kind of a class with Dr. Cousins. Do you have details on that?
I know. Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. I'm sure it's happening. We both have agreed to it, and it's through it's called the vegancommunity.org. And so it's just we're waiting to hear from the organizer and the guy in India. They work together to just give us a date. It's probably a once per month for 6 months. I mean, we're not sure exactly, but the format, and it'll be a whole sort of a course on thriving as vegans and being effective in vegan advocacy and doing it together. So we haven't, you know, we've been busy. I guess everybody's been busy. So I'm waiting to hear from them, and they haven't been forthcoming. So as soon as I hear something, I'll let you know. But right now it's still a gleam in our eye. I know he wants to do it too. So I'm pretty sure it'll be happening, you know, starting in January. I mean, that's the plan. We're going to start in January. Oh, look at this. Madeline is showing me, you probably can't see it, but it's a little teddy bear with a photograph of her and me when we got married 31 years ago. That's in my sister's room here, the little bedroom here in my sister's house. So that's so cute. Isn't that cute? So here's Madeline. She just came in. We're going to have our shower and go to bed here. But thank you, everyone, for joining us on our World Peace Diet Circle this evening on the third Thursday, December 19th. As Tammy said, don't forget, in 2 days we've got the winter solstice, and then the light starts returning. Yeah. So much love to you all. Let's say our prayer that we always say together at the end, and unmute your microphone so we can get the whole full effect of the great cacophony of prayers together. Here we go. It starts with the word compassion. Compassion circles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion circles the earth for all beings everywhere. One more time with feeling. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. All right. So please always remember we have a recording of every call that we do, and you can get that on our website, worldpeacemastery.com/conference.htm. And I can't put that link up anymore on Facebook. It'll immediately throw me in jail if I put that link up. It's so interesting. I just can't do it. But it's there. All the last 13 years, the whole archive is there. And so we'll look forward to seeing you on the first Thursday of January in the new year for our meditation. We're holding you in our hearts with love. Thank you all for the efforts you're making. If you have any questions, send me an email. And we'll get these books out, the audio books out. We'll do our best. And much love to all of you. Thanks again.
Thank you, Will and Madeline.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madeline.
It was fun.
All right.
Happy holidays.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Hi, Lisa.
Yeah.